out to Taylor. Taylor pulls up from the three-point, from the free throw line, excuse me, and he makes it. So Taylor, the hot hand. 54-46, 7:45 remaining as Cook brings the ball up for the Black Shirts. Both teams trading punches quite nicely here. Cook gives it to Tadioka, the left wing. Tadioka to Check coming around from the corner. Check now in the middle here. Check still dribbling. Guarded by Hayden. Check's going to drive into Cook. Cook's going to drive. Cook all the way into the corner. Confusion between Check and Tadioka. Check has it. Check to Tadioka. Nice little pass. Tadioka to Cook in the corner. Cook has a little trouble to handle. He gets it back. Now he's in the right wing here. Cook's going to drive. Kicks it to Check. Check to Robinson now in the far back court. Dangerously close line. He drives past Hayden. He's going to go the distance. No, kicks it out to Check. Check to Tadioka. Back to Check. Check hesitant to shoot that tray. Into Robinson in the paint. Robinson double team now. He's in trouble. And a timeout is called by Coach Richter. 6:51 remaining in the second half. Black Shirts hanging on nicely to a 54-46 lead. And we'll take a quick timeout here too on the Black Shirt Sports Radio Network. Calvin.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Hey, we're back. Maguanago High School. Downtown Donnie Brown here with Connor Boston from Chicago. Calvin back at the studio. Check will inbound for the Black Shirts. 6:51 remaining. Inbound attack. Near the top of the free throw line. Gives it back to Check in the right corner. Check dribbling now. Stout in the game now. Check drives. Ball stripped away. Out of bounds. Out the Black Shirts. Some scrappy D by the Bucks. Peyton Pohl now knocking that ball. And off of Check's leg and out of bounds. Inbound to Madsen from Hayden. Robinson guarding Madsen. 6:35 and counting. Gives it to Frelke on the key. Frelke to pull now. Back to Madsen in the corner now. Madsen's going to drive. And the shot falls and the foul. Beautiful shot there by Madsen. His first points of the second half. Robinson gets called with the foul. That's his first. So Madsen looking to make it a 5-point game with this free throw here. 54-48, 6:21 remaining. And the big man, number 25, comes in, Nathan Roy. And the free throw's good. 54-49. 6:20 and winding. Tyron Cook brings the ball up slowly for the Black Shirts. Probably in no hurry to score here. Cook goes on a Tadioka pick. The big man Roy on him. Kicks at the Check in the wing. Check to Cook. Cook's going to drive. And he gets fouled by Roy. They're calling it a non-shooting foul. Maybe that's on... It might have been on Hayden. Be the fifth team foul, 6:02 remaining. It's going to be a side out here. Yep, that's Hayden's first. So Hayden got Cook before the shot was taken, according to the refs. Inbound to Cook. Cook now driving to the center, over to Robinson in the left backcourt into Tadioka in the corner. Tadioka. Gets it back out to Cook under heavy pressure. Double pressure on Cook. His Stout all out. Stout makes it easy, buddy. Evan Stout from Banting Park. 6 points for the junior. 5:36 and counting. 56-49 Black Shirts. Madsen with the ball. Whistle is blown. Is it a foul away from the ball? I don't understand. Tadioka. Tadioka gets a second foul. Taylor will inbound for the Mucks. Oh, beautiful inbound to Reibold. It makes a beautiful layup. Well-designed play. 6 points for Reibold for this half. 56-51. Blackshirts. 5:20 and counting. Robinson guarded by Reibold. Robinson drives, holds back, kicks it out to Tadioka. Tadioka shows three, gives it back to Cook. Cook driving, kicks it to Check in the corner. Check hesitant to shoot the trays. Check now driving, dishes it to Tadioka in the corner. Tadioka back to Cook, 4:59 and counting. Cook driving this time, he gets fouled. Looks like it'll be before the shot again. Four fouls on Carson Taylor on that one with 4:56 remaining. Bowling's going to come back in, and Bowling's going to replace Carson Taylor. 17 points for Taylor so far. Inbounded to Cook in the right corner. Dribbles out, guarded by Froelt. Now he's going to drive. Cook makes a beautiful move to the basket. Double pump, reverse layup. Tyron Cook. 58-51, 4:43. Ball goes off of an E, and Robinson has it. Robinson going coast to coast now. Robinson gets fouled. Comes down hard. Reibold gets the call on that one for sure. I thought Reibold might have had a little ball on that. What do you think, Connor?
I mean, he definitely knocked him down. So
there was some contact, yeah. So
yeah,
we'll go. So Robinson will go to the charity stripe. 3-for-4 from the line tonight. 17 points. It's a two-shot foul, shooting foul. First one for Daniel. Yes! 18 points for Robinson, 59-51, 4:38 remaining. Second free throw now for Robinson. Yes! So it's a 9-point lead, 60-51, 4:36 and counting as Madsen brings it up. Guarded by Robinson. The big guy has it, and he's fouled. A kind of a little too aggressive in the backcourt there, I think, Connor, with Tadioka. So Tadioka's got to go out with three. Tadioka and Check come out. Morose and Karinko come in. So it's inbounded to Madsen. Madsen's good. Nope. He kicks it over to Taylor. Taylor shows three, holds back. Taylor driving now. Gets it out into the corner to pull now. Guarded by Stout to Reibold. Reibold fakes. He's going to drive. Reibold, beautiful in the paint. He's been unstoppable. That's 8 points for Reibold tonight. As Cook dribbles past him, heavy pressure into the corner to Karinko for three. Yes! Tommy Karinko from Banting Park! Drains a three, and it's a 10-point Blackshirt lead with 3:50 remaining. Madsen has the ball. Oh, has a little trouble. Robinson almost stripped it. Madsen driving now. Passed out. A beautiful layup by Madsen. He wanted to fall on that. You know, the way he moved, there wasn't time for the Blackshirts to follow him. Robinson the ball, left backcourt, 63-55. Robinson dribbling here, driving, coming back. Heavy pressure from Taylor with four fouls. Got to be careful. Robinson driving, kicks it out to Stout in the corner for three. Stout, oh, off the back of the rim. Stout fights for the rebound, but Muck hangs on. Couple guys fall it. There's a scrum for the ball. Muck comes up with it. It's Kilton with, no, it's Madsen with the ball. Madsen driving, pull now driving, covered by Stout. He kicks it back out now, 3:05 remaining. A long three from Madsen. Off the rim. Rebounded by Cook. Boy, did he sky for that. Connor and I had a beautiful poster shot of that one. Alley-oop to Robinson. Doesn't fall. Beautiful alley-oop by Cook. Here come the Mucks. Reibold driving. Kicks it back out to Bowling. Bowling top of the key. Polnow takes a look. Polnow driving past Stout. Oh, beautiful layup by Polnow. Stout played great defense on that, but Polnow just kicked it back like a fall-away layup jumper. So that makes the score 63-57 with 2:39 as Muck calls timeout. Polnow, the 5'11 sophomore guard, gets his first points of the game. So, Connor, you know, a lot of time left with a six-point lead. What do you do if you're the Blackshirts? You got to believe Muck's designing maybe some sort of full-court press.
I'm thinking you milk the clock out for as much as you can and see if you can get at least a two in there. But if not, just keep possession.
And you know what else is the Mucks have seven fouls, so it's a one-on-one scenario. So, you know, even some fouls here on the conserve some time. See what the Black Shirts do. Black Shirts have been decent from the line tonight. But all that goes out the window in the waning seconds of the game, waning minutes of the game, right?
Yeah.
So Moreau's will inbound for the Black Shirts. Full court press, as we figured. Full court man press. Inbounded to Check. Check gets fouled right away by Madsen.
They're already going to fouling.
That's only Madsen's first.
Yeah.
So it'll be a 1-1. So credit to us for anticipating the coach's strategy here. Coach Steve Pohl now doing a great job here at McGuanago, taking them all the way to the sectional semifinals last year, losing to this Black Shirt team. So you got to believe he's still thinking payback. There's some discussion at the scorers table involving the Muck coaches and one of the referees. Looks like mostly younger officiating crew. One's an old timer like me, probably maybe an extra 10 years on me. So it's a 1-1 for Check, and I think that's maybe, I don't know what the discussion would be about here. 2:36 is your time remaining, so not a lot of time came off the clock. So, quite the delay here over a 1-1. First one by Check, a lot of noise. And he makes it. Ethan Check with some clutch baskets. Five for Check tonight. 64-57. 2:37 remaining. Second shot by Check. Yes! Ethan Check with some key free throws. 2:33 and counting. Black Shirts up by eight. Madsen looks into the corner to Bowling. Bowling's going to drive. Pulls back. Gets it out to Polnow. Polnow looking around. Back to Bowling. Bowling's going to drive on Check. Oh, and a double. A good try there by Bowling. Ball fell out of his hand, and then he like kind of volleyballed it in. And now Taylor fouls. That's five on five. Good night, Gracie. Not the guy you wanted to foul out there. 18 points he goes out with. Thank you, Coach Polnow. I don't understand why you would have him on that full court press there. I figured you would have had him further back. So Check's going to shoot a 1-1 here. 2:14 remaining. He gets the bonus. Ethan Check's got ice in his veins from the line. Not willing to shoot the open threes, but willing to do all the things he does well. Second one goes a little wide. But it's a 9-point Black Shirt lead with 2:10 remaining and counting. Long three from Madsen off the rim. Rebounded by Cook. Cook under heavy pressure. And he gets fouled by Bowling, it looks like. It's not a shooting foul, interestingly enough. How does that work? Are they calling a hell ball? In which case, I thought it would have been Muck's ball. So they don't announce a foul. So Robinson got the inbound, double coverage. Beautiful job getting out of that, looking one way. Beautiful pass to Moreau for the bunny. A great little lip there. Oh, Cook with a beautiful strip. And Check has it for the wide open layup. Yes, Ethan Check. It's now a 70-57 game with 1:38 remaining. The wheels are coming off for the Mucks. But a lot of that has to do with the great play of the Black Shirts. A beautiful strip there by Tyron Cook. All ball. Madsen for a three. Yes! And a timeout from the Mucks. Colin Madsen. 8 points this half. 18 points for the game. From the 6'3 senior guard. Black Shirts really playing well, Connor. Very pleased the way they're passing the ball, the smart plays they're making on defense against a very good Muck team. You know, the way the Muck has been strong in the perimeter, in spite of the good pressure from the Blackshirts. I'm surprised I'm not seeing more of those plays, but I think Coach Ricker does a good job in his one-on-one defense coaching, minimizing those opportunities. So 126 is your count. We're going to stay here. Win here for the Blackshirts would put them at 4-3 for the conference. Excuse me. 4-4 for the conference. Sorry about that. Or no, 4-3. I'll have to recheck that. So inbounded by Moreau's, full court pressure. They get it into Robinson, double covered. Robinson has Cook wide open. Cook hangs on. Cook gets fouled, though. And that's Colin Madsen. Couldn't get a number there. He was kind of in a tough crouch or really stretched his legs to get that foul. 120 remaining. It's 70-60 in favor of the Blackshirts. First by Cook. Yes. Second free throw, 71-60, 120 remaining in the game. Blackshirts ahead. Second one's good for Cook. points for the senior. Madsen has the ball, 115 and counting. Into Reibel. Reibel's going to drive. Reibel makes a layup, easy layup. That's going to be 10 points for Reibel. Another foul on the inbound. Cook gets fouled by Reibel. Oh, no, Polnow gets that one. So 3 on Polnow. Polnow. Eichel all day. 107 remaining. 72-62. Cookie at the line. And the lefty makes the first free throw. 27 points for the All-State senior. Recently listed in BMV's top 10 seniors in Wisconsin, number 7. Second free throw, yes. So we're back to a 12-point lead. 106 and counting. As Madsen drives it up. And Madsen has it back. Madsen driving, kicks it out to Bowling. Into the corner to Kilton for 3. And that's off. Rebounded by Moreau's. A long pass to Cook. Cook hangs on to it, though. Cook on the drive to Robinson. Robinson with the easy 2. So a great basket in transition. 38 and counting for the Blackshirts. Polnow has it. Polnow's going to drive into the corner to Bowling for 3. Bowling, that's off. And Robinson has it all by himself. He's going to slow it down. A class move by the senior. Blackshirts will walk away with a 76-62 victory over the host nation Mucks of Maguanago High School. A well-played game after a very tough loss to Catholic Memorial on Tuesday night. 9 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds, 6, 5, 3. And that'll do it. The Blackshirts are victorious. Their fourth conference victory of the season. And a great warm-up for a Saturday showdown against Fond du Lac. We're really looking forward to that. We'll give you a quick summary of the Blackshirts' success tonight. Tyron Cook led all Blackshirt scorers at 28 points. And probably more than probably a baker's dozen in rebounds. Jack Tadioka, 5 points, including 3 free throws. Robinson with another great night, his second game in a row with more than 20 points. He had 22 and also a host of rebounds. Ethan Scheck might have a season high with 9 points, including 3 free throws, 3 for 4 from the line. Evan Stout, with 6 points tonight, including 4 free throws, 4 of 6 shooting from the line. Charles Rose gets a 2, and Tommy Krinkle gets 3 for the black shirts. So great night, great defensive battle. I mean, the game was scoreless for the first couple minutes of the game, Connor, and then they really poured it on towards the end of the first half, and the scoring continued. It was neat because both teams are trading punches, a lot of back-to-back scoring, and there were a few instances where the black shirts caused some turnovers and got the lead up, and then Muck came fighting right back. So a great battle that ends in victory for our black shirts. Any final comments tonight for Black Shirt Nation, Connor?
I'm excited to see where the team goes after this, because this is a really well played game on all fronts, free throws, passes, executing plays, going deeper into the bench and playing some of those players who haven't gotten the time they need for this year. Yeah. So,
and it's hard to be objective, but it's great to see Evan Stout get some quality time tonight.
Yeah.
That helps with his confidence and giving us 6 points and probably about a half dozen rebounds too.
Yeah. And if you look at the other games, like a lot of these small issues are the reasons why we lost. And it's always been, you know, close in that regard. So I'm excited to see when we play some of those other teams again, like Catholic Memorial.
If we play like we did tonight, exactly, could be different outcomes, or at least closer games. And so, point well taken, Connor. Thank you so much. I'm trying to figure out in my head, if you guys don't mind bearing with me, as they turn the lights out here at Muck High School. No, they're turning them on. That means it's time to go. But the losses came to Muskego, Ocon, Catholic Memorial.
And the last team, Warriors. That was
Muskego. That was Muskego, the first loss.
And then that was...
Second loss came to Ocon. Third loss came to Catholic Memorial. And two, so they, I think they're 4-3 now in the conference, I believe, is their record.
I believe so. I think
the Classic 8 is respectable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, if they were playing the Sports Illustrated top 20 non-conference schedule, that would really look nice. But, you know, kudos to them. Like I said, they played a fantastic Tosa West team to the last play of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They played a tough game against Whitno. The wheels kind of fell off there near the end, but a really well-played game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they got Fondy coming up.
Exactly.
I know I'm missing a couple other great teams in there. So, but I feel like going on playing right now. I think maybe they'll let us play a few little one-on-one before we check out.
Mind. You know, I can cross you over a couple.
That sure would. So, hey, so on behalf of Connor Boston, Calvin from the studio, and myself, downtown Donnie Brown, we will see you Saturday morning on This Week in Waukesha. Don't forget, Caitlin Weber is my guest, the certified athletic trainer who's been with Waukesha South High School Athletics for 12 years. We'll be talking a lot about the issues that have become much more prevalent in light of the DeMar Hamlin injury on national TV on Monday Night Football. So please check in for that show at 8 o'clock. You can call in for questions, 844-267. Did I get that right? 844-927-2789?
2789.
There we go, yeah.
There we go.
And then Saturday, the 3 o'clock matinee at home at South. Coverage starts at 2:30 against Fond du Lac High School. So thanks for joining us tonight here on the Black Shirt Sports Radio Network. Again, the Black Shirts victorious over Maguanago, 76-62. Bye for now, and remember, safety is everyone's responsibility. See ya! All set, Calvin?
Yep. See you on Saturday, Don.
See you on Saturday. Thanks again, my friend.
Yep.
Said I heard you talk about Kentucky last night and would like to remind you that there are Democrats living in Kentucky, too. The investments are important to our economy, so I would not be so callous. And I agree. Yep. Another person said, Rick, it's about time someone calls out Dems for bailing out red states. Yeah, I agree with that, too. Rick, you're right. Joe Biden is a better man than you. Okay, I've heard that as well. And then on the other side, you know, Joe Biden's still a horrible president. And there's all of those ideas. All of that's there. But as I was thinking about this and as I was reading through the emails, it came back to me that, you know, again, I keep coming to this place where we keep bailing out these red states, these welfare states. Did you know 7 of the of the most dependent states, seven of the top 10 most dependent states on federal money are Republican states. Do you know the seven biggest welfare queen states are Republican states? West Virginia, Mississippi, Alaska, Kentucky, Montana, Arizona, Alabama. Those are your welfare states. Those are the states that when they send a dollar to the federal government, they get money back. Some of them a lot more. And if you travel down into the southern states, they've got great infrastructure paid for by federal dollars. And I'm sure the folks in New Jersey who get screwed the most because they send the most to the federal government and get the least back. I'm sure the people in Washington State and in Illinois and in California and Colorado and Wisconsin and Massachusetts and Minnesota, I'm sure they're thrilled that they get to send more money to the federal government than they get back. I'm sure that they're thrilled. Eight of the 10 states that get the least back from the federal government are blue states. I'm sure that they're thrilled to have this kind of redistribution of wealth happen to them so that, you know, states like Alabama, states like Mississippi can rebuild their infrastructure and attract jobs away from them. This is like putting your own kick me sign on yourself. And I'm waiting for someone to go, you know what? I'm tired of kicking myself. This is where my frustration comes. Because you keep bailing out. Understand, I'm willing to help anyone who needs it. But when we're constantly told, we hate you, oh, but please give us the money, I struggle with that. Struggling with it. And, you know, at a certain point, we've got to start calling out these welfare states. At a certain point, you know, New Jersey, Washington, Illinois, California, Colorado, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, Minnesota, they've got to be going, hey, what about us? How about we use that money that we're sending to those welfare states to rebuild our infrastructure, to fund our kids' education, do anything else, to burn in the middle of the street, anything more productive. And this is where the frustration comes, because I look at a state like Kentucky that keeps continually votes for someone like Mitch McConnell, someone like Rand Paul, someone like Massey and the rest of these lunatics. And what ends up happening? Horrible policy. That is a race to the bottom. Horrible policy that ends up at every turn. That ends up at every turn harming working people. Now, Kentucky just, again, this is one of those amazing things. They just, you know, said, oh, you know, we don't need to tax our rich people. Another one of these tax schemes to enrich the wealthy. While, you know, the rest of us, we're going to pick up that tab. And then the citizens of Kentucky, you know, the working people, still not going to get the education, the health care, the jobs that they need. No. Because the ideology of the right, and understand what's happening in Congress right now, that's perfectly okay for the moneyed interest. They want a broken federal government. They want broken oversight. They don't want someone to come tax them. They don't want someone to regulate them. They don't want someone looking over their shoulder. They don't want someone protecting workers. They don't want someone protecting consumers or citizens. They don't want any of that. What they want is they want control. Unfettered control. None of those pesky job-killing regulations. Oh, the same jobs that don't pay a living wage, the same jobs that haven't kept up with the rate of inflation, the same jobs that people have two, three, four of just to make ends meet. Oh, yeah, that. But I'm hoping at some point we address this. Where's Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and Marjorie? I guess she's down to two names. I guess the ex-husband said she can't use the last name anymore. So Marjorie, two names. Are they going to start going, hey, the welfare states we're from, we're going to give all that money back. Is that going to ever happen? Of course it's not. Because they've got it good. No consequences. No consequences whatsoever. Gotta take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you will find ours. From iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CBS News Brief. Divided Republicans on a third day failed to choose a House Speaker. GOP leader Kevin McCarthy has failed to win over as many as 20 of them. So at the request of Republicans, another vote a short time ago, but not for leader.
The nays are 213. The motion is adopted. Accordingly, the House stands adjourned until noon tomorrow.
At least six people have died in major storms that have been hitting California since last weekend. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is in Sacramento County.
When you have a deluge like what we got here last weekend and then another one overnight, that water's hitting what are called burn scars, and it's just completely flooding out.
Positive signs for Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin after he went into cardiac arrest on the field Monday night. Dr. Timothy Pritz at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine.
He is beginning to awaken, and it appears that his neurological condition and function is intact.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Gasoline prices in Wisconsin are going back up. AAA says the statewide average went up 9 cents yesterday to $3.11 a gallon for regular. That's 20 cents higher than it was a week ago. AAA blames temporary refinery shutdowns in late December due to bad weather. Demand for fuel is also on the rise. People in Wisconsin have a little more time to sound off about the state's wolf management plan. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is extending the public comment period through the end of February. The DNR says Wisconsin's wolf management strategy hasn't been updated since 2017. Wardens say Wisconsin's wolf population has changed since then. In sports, the Bucks just barely beat Toronto last night, 104-101. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it while we can. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Washington Journal editorial page, I think hit the nail right on the head. Ask the question, who's crazy enough to be Republican Speaker? And honestly, who wants the job? I mean, the fact that Kevin McCarthy has sat there and gotten beaten down 11 times. At some point, you just go, screw it, you're on your own, guys. Find someone else to be your whipping boy. But so soulless, so seeking of power, never going to do. I don't think he's ever going to do that, but we will find out. But the question is, who would want the job? And here to share some thoughts on that front, I've asked Bill Scheer to come talk with us. Bill is a political writer over at Washington Monthly, also a contributor at Politico. You can check out his website, shareable.com. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Always wonderful to talk to you.
So, you enjoying the chaos? The predictable chaos? Are we enjoy? Let's start there. For you, was this predictable?
I'd say yes. I mean, I wasn't, you know, tossing off public predictions, but it did seem to me, running up, that you had five people at least who were explicit and said they were not going to vote for Kevin McCarthy. I mean, it can be tricky to sometimes to tell, you know, who's blustering and who means it. But this is a party that has incentivized intra-party warfare. There's not a lot of political cost to be paid by waging war against each other. They've had Donald Trump setting the tone, setting the pace for that for a long time. So the only way that someone can be made to climb down in that situation is to undercut them politically at home, publicly humiliate them and shame them so they feel like they are hurting themselves. But I see no evidence that they're being hurt by this at home. So when they say, we're not going to vote for Kevin McCarthy, I tend to believe they're not going to vote for Kevin McCarthy. And, yeah. they've proven themselves, you know, 11 times up to this point.
No matter how much he concedes, no matter how much he gives away, no matter how much he, you know, how much they're able to extract out of him, it's never going to be enough.
Well, you know, I've been having this discussion with some folks on social media. I mean, it can be difficult to read minds. I mean, you can't do it perfectly from the outside, of course. But my sense of it is that there are policy things that these folks care about. They and I think first and foremost they want to have budget negotiations where they have a speaker willing to shut down the government and breach the debt limit. They want to take things that far. Now, we had folks who took these things hostages in the past, but perhaps at bottom some actual reticence for shooting the hostage, particularly the debt limit.
Right.
We have not actually breached the debt limit. We have not defaulted on our debt and caused a global economic meltdown by jeopardizing the full faith and credit of the United States. I think at least five of these folks in the McCarthy opposition pool are quite willing to breach that limit and want someone willing to take things that far. And they don't trust Kevin McCarthy to be that person. So they can get all the concessions in the world. You know, they've asked for things like, you know, first and foremost, they want the ability to have a motion to vacate the speaker, which is a way to fire the speaker. One person can have can force the vote.
Right.
You have to have the votes. But of course, if only five of them show up to deny McCarthy the vote at that point, then the Democrats don't bail him out, then he's fired. So that sword will be hanging over his head the whole time if they don't do what they want him to do. So you might say, well, look, he's given you that concession. If he doesn't play the debt limit game the way you want to play it, you can fire him. But they can logically say, well, yeah, but I'd still rather have someone else who I don't have to force them to do it. I want someone who I know is going to do it with full desire and intent, and I have the means to get that. I have the votes to deny Kevin McCarthy, and why should I give away power that I have? I mean, you probably saw the Sean Hannity,
I did,
Lauren Boebert interview, and Sean Hannity is badging her. Well, they have 201, and you have 20. Why should he withdraw? To be frank, this is the same debate that happened with the Democrats when Bernie Sanders was saying, we have 48 and you, Manchin, Sinema are just two. Why are you being so unfair? Guess what? They had the power. They had the determining votes. So Manchin all by his lonesome would say, too bad, kids, my way or the highway. This is the same situation right now. Boebert, Gates, Good, Biggs, Rosendale. I mean, other folks might take a deal from McCarthy, but if those five say, we don't want to budge, They don't have to budge. If they want to deny McCarthy, they get to deny McCarthy. Unless Republicans partner with Democrats, that's the only way to take away their power. It's the only way to take away their power is to partner with Democrats, which most Republicans are saying they're not willing to do. So they are giving them power. They're complaining about it, but they're giving them the power that they have.
Yeah, and look, I think Nancy Pelosi said there's no way that they're going to bail them out either. You know, I think she said something along the lines of, you know, we'll work together on policy and do all that stuff, but they got to figure out who their leader is first. Which, you know, I about time they stopped bailing them out.
Well, you know, Democrats shouldn't just bail out McCarthy for the heck of it, and Democrats probably should never give McCarthy the votes. Period.
Never.
But if Republicans can't get their act together, and a group of Republicans say, "Hey, Democrats, let's go in on a different person, a Republican, but someone who will not shut down the government, will put a motion on the floor to raise the debt limit." And I would say if a bill passes the Senate, that bill comes over to the House for a vote. It might get amended, but we have a vote on it. We don't just bottle up the way Republicans did with immigration reform in 2013. I think that would be that is a net gain for one thing for the country, because we won't have a freaking debt limit crisis,
right?
For number one. And number two, it means that the Congress can function. If there is a bipartisan deal in the Senate, we get 60 votes, it gets some kind of vote in the House and maybe gets to Biden's desk. And it's not just guaranteed gridlock for the next 2 years. That is a net gain for Democrats.
Well, I mean, we've seen it in Ohio. We saw it in Pennsylvania. You know, they've got consensus speakers in both of their houses. That, you know, I don't think anybody thought was possible, you know, before. Maybe this is the way forward. I think I talked about it yesterday. Ro Khanna has come out with a couple of names, Mike Gallagher, Brian Fitzpatrick from Philadelphia, as a moderate Republican to come in and be that speaker.
Yeah, I mean, McCarthy's trust quotient is so low that I don't think Democrats could ever make him the person. But I think there are lots of people, you know, particularly folks who are in the Problem Solvers Caucus, Don Bacon, Fitzpatrick. These are people that Democrats could work with and feel like, okay, I trust you don't want to have a debt limit crisis. I trust if there is a bipartisan deal in the Senate, you want to see something happen in the House because you're in the Problem Solvers Caucus and you voted for some of those things over the past 2 years. That's where I think there would be some potential for an agreement. But again, if most Republicans are saying we don't want to do that, I mean, then there's no deal. But that means you're going to have 10, 20, 30, 40 votes on for Speaker until they figure it out. And it probably means doing what the Never Kevins want, which is having a very weak Speaker who they can fire at will.
Yeah, but the Democrats just need, down the road, and I'm not advocating for this at any point right now, but down the road, all they really need is 4 votes.
On which side?
If they're going to help, you know, craft, like a Brian Fitzpatrick, which I don't know would be a horrible choice. You pulled him. They've got, 214? You need, 4 more to get to 218.
Well, I think you need 5. Because the Democrats have 200. Well, there's a vacancy right now. I think they have 212 right now. If that seat got filled with the specials, then they get the 213, if I remember correctly. So in theory, yes, but you would need all the other Republicans then to be in on that deal. And chances are, if you're putting up a Brian Fitzpatrick, you're not getting all of those Republicans. That's what the math will get fuzzy, because we don't know at this juncture how many Republicans we want to go along and how many Democrats you then need to make that deal happen.
It's going to be interesting to see how this continues. Do you see this continuing into next week? Is there any signs that you think of that this could change?
I mean, I think McCarthy's toast. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. That's just my gut opinion. I'm a little surprised it's going on this long, quite frankly. But, you know, McCarthy has a plan, which is he seems close to some kind of deal with part of the group of 20 that have not given him their votes yet, that basically has almost every concession that they've been demanding. they've been saying openly, we know this doesn't get us all the way, but it'll get us part of the way. Their hope is once they have that deal and they celebrate it and Sean Hannity, you know, toasted on Fox News, that they'll create some kind of momentum and put new pressure on the hardest core never Kevins. It's that last part that I am skeptical is going to fall into place for them. So my gut opinion is if they get this deal, they still hit that brick wall. And then at that point, McCarthy has to say, okay, the jig is up here. As long as McCarthy thinks he's got some, you know, 5% chance at this thing,
yeah,
and nobody else is bailing on him on the House floor, then he stays in. If he really feels like he has no path, then he's not going to waste anyone's time anymore.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long this plays out. The one thing that Kevin has done, though, and good on you, Sparky, you've made history. You will be remembered. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Bill Scheer. Bill's a political writer over at the Washington Monthly, also a contributor at Politico. You can check out his website, shearable.com. We'll get links out on social media. I want to get your thoughts on January 6th, the anniversary. Thoughts on what the day is going to look like?
I mean, I don't know if we're going to have any kind of turmoil. I don't know if the insurrectionists and their sympathizers are going to do anything unfortunate tomorrow. I certainly hope not. But I do think that the net of the past 2 years has been a resurgence of democracy. America came together on election day to say, we don't want insurrectionists. We don't want election deniers. We don't want to hand the Senate or our governor's seats over to people who aren't going to respect democracy. And most importantly, our Secretary of State positions. Almost every Secretary of State candidate who was election denier lost in 2022. And the only exceptions are in very, very red states. So I'm pretty heartened by the response that the American people have made to the initial insurrection and their reaction to the information that's come out by the January 6th Commission over the past year. So that's all very positive. And I feel much better about the course of events if it wasn't for these few people in the House that want to breach the debt limit, who haven't learned the lessons of what the American people wanted from the election results in November.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Don't you think that the country needs this performance? I mean, what we're seeing, because you're right. I mean, what they want is so much worse down the road. They really want this. You've brought it up a number of times, this debt ceiling fight in August. They want this. This is like the kid, you telling the kid, don't touch the hot thing. And then we're going, no, I want to touch the hot thing. I need to. I have to touch the hot thing. This is like, to your analogy of, you know, shooting the hostage. They're fantasizing about shooting the hostage.
Yeah, and I'm terrified about it. I mean, I've been on the show a number of times. You know, I'm a fairly optimistic guy. I don't always go for the doom and gloom analysis. So I don't rush to assume that bad things are going to happen. But I'm genuinely worried that this Republican Party, this House Republican Conference, doesn't have the spine to stand up to the people who are nihilistic and do want to touch the hot stove. I don't think it's the majority of the House conference, but if they can't stand up to these five people now, then how are we going to stand up later? I mean, the only hope then, I mean, if you have a weak speaker, if you have a single member motion to vacate rule, you have a push to breach the debt limit. The only way you get out of it at that point is a so-called discharge petition, where you find 218 House members without the speaker's help to sign a petition. And once that's presented, the speaker can't stop it from getting a vote on the floor. So you're basically going around the speaker. So I certainly hope we can have a handful of Republicans who are willing to do that, you know, in crunch time. But that's the last line of defense. And so to have it rely on that definitely gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, no, especially after, you know, what you saw happen to Kinzinger and Cheney, there are going to be few Republicans of conscience stepping forward to save democracy in the future. Just my thought.
But we'd only need about five. So I hope there's five there. I wouldn't count it out. But that may be where the public pressure has to come to bear.
Yeah.
realize this is not like government shutdowns are bad, but we get over them. Like a debt limit default is beyond bad, and we will not recover from it easily, if ever.
What I don't understand is why do we even have this artificial debt limit? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's always, you know, in my house, I don't know what you do in the Scheer household, but when we argue about spending, it's before we spend the money. This is going, we've already spent the money. We're just going to argue if we're going to actually pay the bills. That's insane. It's insane to have this artificial level. It's insane to have this tool that they can use to hold us hostage. At some point, this has to go away.
Right. And just so folks understand here, the debt limit is a restriction on what the Treasury can pay out for debt obligations. It's not a constraint on the Congress for incurring the debt obligations.
Right.
So to put the burden on the Treasury and put them in that treacherous position is extraordinarily politically dangerous. And we've managed to escape the worst, you know, time and time again. But you only got to be wrong once for it to be a real problem.
Yep.
And if there's one thing that I'm upset with the Democrats about over the past 2 years is that they did not solve this problem on I'm a pretty bipartisan guy. I was very optimistic about bipartisanship. I think I was validated in the past 2 years. But this is one area where you didn't want to leave it to bipartisanship. You should have taken matters into your own hands and raised the debt limit to some literally ludicrous number like a million Googleplex, so you would never ever reach it in a million years, and then we would never talk about it ever again. And the reason why they didn't, I assume, is that they were afraid, enough of them were afraid that Republicans would use this in ads to suggest that they were, you know, wanton spenders. But you know what? You passed the $2 trillion American Rescue Plan Act. You know, you already took your chances with that. The debt limit thing, I think, was totally secondary as a political matter. So they just should have taken it off the table and had this not be a problem in the future. And I'm frustrated that they didn't.
No, I'm with you. And regardless if you did it or not, they're still going to hit you with that stick anyway. So you might as well commit the act. But Bill, I appreciate the time and the thoughts as always. Good stuff, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Good stuff, Bill Scheer. Make sure you check out his website, Scheerable.com. He's a contributor over at Politico Magazine and also the Washington Monthly. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1933. That was the day that construction on one of the most iconic landmarks in the United States, the Golden Gate Bridge, began. The bridge was built during the height of the Great Depression, where one in four people in the nation were out of work. San Francisco did not have enough iron workers for the project. Workers from across the nation flocked to the city hoping to get hired. Some of them purchased used Social Security cards and addresses from San Franciscans so they could meet the residency requirement to work on the job. Many had no previous experience with ironwork, but stretched the truth to get hired. The ironworkers' Local 377 coordinated the hiring. The job paid well, but it was potentially hazardous. First, the workers had to excavate 3 million cubic feet of dirt to create the anchorages on each side of the bridge. Then the dangerous work of building the high bridge towers began. The two iconic towers soar 746 feet above the sea. The dense fog on the bay made the work all the more slippery and precarious. The project was one of the first to require workers to wear hard hats. A safety net was rigged beneath the workers in case they fell. 19 men fell into the net and lived to tell the tale. They called themselves the Halfway to Hell Club. Others were not so lucky. In 1937, a scaffolding collapsed. It ripped through the safety net. 12 men fell into the ocean hundreds of feet below. 10 died. On May 27, 1937, 200,000 people walked across the completed bridge for the very first time. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, they have proposed a new rule that would prohibit employers from imposing non-compete agreements on their employees. And I've been saying this for years. These are idiotic. Unless you're doing something that's really, really highly specialized and with trade patents and things that are, central to a company's existence. These non-compete agreements are ridiculous, and they've gotten to be so widespread. You may remember a couple of years ago, the sandwich shop, Jimmy John's. Yes, sandwich shop. They were making their workers sign non-compete agreements. Yes, sandwiches are proprietary information. Peanut butter and jelly is now proprietary. No, if you work for us, you can never make another peanut butter and jelly sandwich again. You think I'm kidding? They actually had to go to court for this because they were forcing workers to sign these. Now, understand, they were never going to be able to enforce them. And they had to understand that. But what it was that chilling effect of the workers who didn't know better. And a lot of people don't know. They sign it. They go, oh, OK, I'll take this job. And I guess I can't go work at another fast food restaurant because they make sandwiches. And I don't quite get that theory, but it's what they were doing. And the argument is. What these non-competes do is they suppress wages because it limits the movement of workers from one job to another. So if you're working at Jimmy John's for $8 an hour, and I signed that agreement, I can't go across the street to the Joe's Deli who's paying $8.50 an hour because I may get in trouble. You're not going to make that jump. And that 50 cents an hour when you're making $8 an hour is a big freaking deal. And, Jimmy John's may have to pay $8.75 to keep you. And so they understand this. And it's not just sandwich shops. It's in a lot of industries, especially in the white collar world where you would go, you should have the ability to move around. Oh, no. In fact, according to Federal Trade Commission estimates, they say that banning these non-compete contracts would open up new job opportunities for some 30 million of us and raise wages by, get this, $300 billion a year. Now, corporate America, not thrilled at all, because that's less for them, But again, it comes back to what kind of an economy do we want to have? Now, we're told, by the people who are destroying our government, that they want a meritocracy. I love that. But you look at the game that's been set up, the meritocracy argument. Sorry, you signed a non-compete. You can't go anywhere. And I've talked to people over the years who have signed these, and you go, I don't know. Is a nurse someone that you can say that they have such specialized skill in your particular industry that they can't go work at the hospital across town? I don't know. Kind of makes you wonder. So it's about time. It's about time we look at some of the things that have been propped up around us like this. And this is why, again, elections have consequences and elections matter. There's a ton of this kind of stuff going on with the people that the Biden administration has put into these positions that are looking at things differently. And this is why the right is losing their mind, because, the neoliberal agenda, the corporate friendly agenda, didn't matter, Democrat, Republican. Didn't matter because they were still getting theirs. The system was rigged in the wealth class's favor. One thing that Biden is doing, and quietly, is undoing a lot of that neoliberal stuff. And I know, but he was always one of them. Yeah. But I'm looking at what he's doing as president. And I'm like this. I'm quite happy with it. We should be doing more of it, and we should be doing it faster. I look at what they're doing at the National Labor Relations Board. Good stuff. As a working person, you should want an active, engaged, aggressive National Labor Relations Board to protect workers and their rights and ensure that people have the right to collectively bargain. You should want that.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.